Now it's time for Homegrown on 94.7 WPBC LP Charlottesville with your hosts Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones, Charlottesville's only radio show devoted to local arts. And now, here's Leslie.
Good morning, Sunday morning. Whether you're an art maker, an art breaker, an art faker, or just an art partaker, welcome all, because all are welcome to Homegrown, a show about local art. I'm the one that they call Clinton, and I'm here with a person who doesn't suffer from allergies as much as I do, Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Well, good morning, my stuffy little Clinton.
I don't know that I'm stuffy as much as I feel like I've had several sandpaper things raked across my throat.
Ooh, well, but you have to talk this morning. That's not a good thing.
It is not a good thing.
Okay.
So, yeah, so we'll start the show the way we always start the show, which is with a parental advisory. And I'll tell you, the parental advisory this morning is I might just fall into a coughing fit. I'll try.
No, don't do that.
I will try not to. So if you don't want your little innocent ones to be exposed to Rocka's coughing fit, then you've been advised.
That's the parental advisory?
Parental advisory this morning. Hey.
All righty. Well, that was dispatched quite quickly, wasn't it? Maybe we should get to our first guest.
Let's do that.
I'm
so thrilled.
All right. We have the amazing Keith Morris here with us this morning.
I'm amazing. That's great.
Yeah. Hey, I've listened to the album. Yeah, you are. Yeah,
thank you. We're thrilled with the record. We're talking about the Dirty Gospel.
We are talking about the Dirty Gospel. Yes.
And I'm here to promote the album, play some songs, right?
Yeah.
And the CD release show. Yeah.
So your CD release is coming up, right?
It's April 8th, Friday, April 8th. Over at the Ante Room, and the door is open for that at 7, and the show starts at 8 with Mr. Baby, a great local band, and Sarah White and the Pearls. Yes.
Cool.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. So, and then we go on after that. So I'm pretty psyched about it. I love Mr. Baby and I love Sarah White. So I think it's going to be a really good show.
That's going to be a good night of music, man.
Yeah, it definitely will be some good music.
So, so as I said, I've listened to the album, and we were talking a little bit before the show. This album is truly a mixture of genres. There's a lot of blues influence. There's a lot of rock influence. There's some folk thrown in there, but it all works. It's really, really interesting to listen to. So what was your main inspiration for this album?
Oh, my inspiration or the musical inspiration?
Ooh, you have more than one?
Yeah,
do tell.
Well, what you're talking about, the different styles, it for me, I just write the songs and I hear like the song come through to me. And so it's really it's often not a whole lot of choice involved. Like, for example, Dubstep Blues, I was driving one day, and I just all of a sudden started hearing the song in my head, you know. Oh, no, I got the strung out dubstep.
Yeah.
And I just started thinking to myself, well, that is interesting. However, I'm not sure I like the idea of singing strung out Dubstep Blues. my mom's going to listen to this record, and that's not too, you know. And
yeah.
So I tried to change it, but you can't change it.
You can't change it.
No.
And you know what? I'm very happy that I am not the only artist whose muse just comes to you in your head out of the blue.
Out of the blue. Like,
and seriously. Seriously,
yeah.
If somebody like was inside my head on a day when the muse was active, they would think I was crazy.
Yeah, you know, I just check out sometimes and like it's happening. I'll be on the back porch.
Yeah,
I think it's also a situation where your muse isn't quite on concert with what your mom would appreciate as well.
Well, what I did do with the song is find a way to make it a cautionary tale. I certainly don't support people messing around with hard drugs.
And, right.
That's dangerous stuff. So I sort of turned it, at the end, I turned it into a little cautionary tale. And
so how did you get started playing music? Because as you know, we were talking before the show, you mentioned you were a teacher and you went to school for that. So so how did you get started playing music?
Yeah, I just have always had this thing with songs since I was a little kid, and just really from an early age appreciated the power of a good song, and was fascinated by people who could do it, like Leonard Cohen and Bob Dylan and Lou Reed and those type guys.
I thought I heard some Dylan. I thought I heard a lot of Dylan in that. Yeah.
Well, a lot of it is there's staple singers in there too. It's not, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. I mean, because it's interesting. We talked about I've got to stop saying. Oh, I'm going to try not to say the same thing. As we talked about the different genres and the different styles that are in this, throughout the whole thing, am I wrong? I get this quiet underlying gospel through the whole thing.
Right, right. Sure, absolutely. And we have a little choir that sings with us. Davina Jackson, her sister Davida Voigt, she just got married. And my wife Jen formed the choir, and another girl, Samantha Reed, was brought in to fill out the choir for this record. And they're just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And, you know, Davina and Davida have sung with the Itals, the Wailers, Corey Harris.
Holy smokes.
You know, they're really, really good. And, you know, adding a dimension like that to my songs and the band, it changes everything. And I think it really contributes an awful lot. And yeah, I love gospel music, but the record's not a gospel album.
Right.
But
right.
There are gospel undertones and, well, overtones, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, I just love, you know, the interplay between vocals and background singers. I really like that. And, you know,
and that's nice to hear, because I really enjoy that as well. I get a big kick out of just what you said, this interplay between a lead singer and a background singer.
Yeah.
I'll stress the idea of the interplay, because sometimes you hear people and it's just the background singers are there and the lead singers there, and you don't really hear much of a cross pollination between the two.
Right, right.
But to get that moment where you've got the lead speaking to the background and the background's really speaking to the leads and them working together, that can get really exciting.
That's what we do. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And it's so we're there. It's so rare to find somebody who will commit to having not just a background singer, but having like a little mini choir.
Yeah.
Behind it. Were there concerns about, well, you know, that's a big band to carry around with me?
Oh, it's a huge problem as far as, scheduling shows and things like that and coordinating the band and everything. But
yeah, I saw a picture on your website. How big are the Crooked Numbers?
Well, that's why we're called the Crooked Numbers. They can be anywhere from, I think, 6 folks in the band to, we've had 9 up on stage before.
Holy smokes.
I'm sure we've had 9 or 10. And so I like the big band sound, though. You know, I just enjoy it. I really enjoy hearing a full band. You know,
yeah.
I like the sound of hearing a band play, and that's what we went for with this record too. Is not a lot of production. I want to hear the band play. You know.
Thank you.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. why don't we hear? Why don't we hear it?
Psychopaths and sick men.
All right, Psychopaths and Sycophants from Keith Morris and the Crooked Numbers, late upcoming CD, The Dirty Gospel. So I am probably going to make myself sound like an old fogey, but it's certainly too late for me to worry about that now.
You're too young to be an old fogey.
But I find that so much of music production today tries to make it sound like people aren't actually playing instruments.
That's, I would agree.
Excellent. And so I'm so pleased to listen to some music where you can actually hear, cause I'm a geek. I like to hear people play instruments.
It's great. Yeah. It's a lost. I mean, I listen to the modern production and I just find it hard to listen to. Like you said, you can't hear a band playing. You know, it's in the sounds don't sound organic to me. Right. You know, and anyway, as far as what we do, that's really a priority with us is, you know, don't fancy it up too much. I want you to hear the band playing. And I put together a really good band, and these guys are all really, really good players. So why not, you know?
Yeah. So how long has it taken for you to sculpt this band?
It's been a long time. We've been playing the main group of guys has been playing for many years, and I'd say about, 8 or 9. Girls, women, Davina, Davida, and Jen have been with us for about 2 or 3. Jen was with us before that singing, but we added Davina and Davida about 2 or 3 years ago, I think. And it's just changed everything, you know, and it's even changes the way that I approach writing.
Oh, yeah.
And for example, what we were talking about, the interplay between the vocalist and the background vocals.
Uh-huh.
And that's become a new thing for me to toy around with. And you hear it, you heard it on that, Psychopaths and Sycophants. And you hear it on a lot of other songs, Brownsville Market, Are You Free Now? You know, those songs have a lot of that sort of interplay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so the title, The Dirty Gospel,
yeah.
What's the story behind it?
Well, I think a few people have asked me, well, is that about the Bible or something like that? He's like, no. It's, you know, it's really, to me, the dirty gospel is just the awful truth. Mm. You know, I'm going to tell you the truth, warts and all.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Because going through the album, the songs sort of have that feel of it. It's like, okay, this is what it is.
Well, I mean, the songs talk about a lot of different things. They're, Brownsville Market is about some dark stuff. It's about what happens to victims of child sex abuse. Are You Free Now is about, a lot of the record is about, a couple of years ago, my brother committed suicide. And so a lot of this album, a lot of the songs come out of that.
Right.
A lot of it's about that, really. I mean, the song Prejudice and Blind is definitely all about that territory.
Well, first of all, I'm so sorry about your brother.
Yeah, thank you.
But that it, even though hearing you say that, mm-hmm. the album, it doesn't feel dark. Like it doesn't have a bad feeling.
Right.
You know, when you listen to it, there is this element of hope in every right. single song, even the ones that are talking about dark things. Mm-hmm. You don't come away feeling like, you know, you're depressed now. you feel like you've gone on a journey.
There you go. That's the goal. Is the record is 45 minutes, and I want you to listen to it all at one time. There's a definite arc to the album, and at the end of it, I want you to feel like you're changed. You know,
yeah.
Even just a little bit. You've been on a journey, and you're changed a little bit. Yeah.
Okay, so I want to listen to my favorite
okay.
on the album.
And what's that?
Yeah, which one are we going to, which one are we going to
do? We're
going to
do Are You Free Now?
Right, and that vocal interplay will be, that's what this song has a lot of.
Free Now from The Dirty Gospel, the upcoming CD from Keith Morris and the Crooked Numbers. It's really we really have to apologize to our listeners here, because I think you're missing a lot of the best conversations that are going on while the music is playing. So one, you were talking about the intertextuality between songs.
Between songs, yes. At the end of Are You Free Now, it mentions the song Pale Moon, which is the third song on the record. And it references it directly. I could go into that further, but I think you wouldn't make a different point.
Right. I was saying that it's so great to have somebody who thinks of a record, of a whole CD as as an organic whole.
Yes.
Right. And to approach it as like one large thing. And
all my favorite records are that way. And you know, you were mentioning how that's all changed.
And, right. That's
because of the iPod shuffle.
Yes. It is my contention that the development and the population of the iPod and shuffle play has done more to change the way we listen to music,
right,
and think about music in the last 20 years than anything else.
It certainly has, and you know, like we were saying, some for the good, some for the bad. Yeah, I think that the idea of interconnected of an album as an organic whole is sort of gone.
It is, and I think it's partly due to the fact that now we can just go and buy that one song that we heard on the radio that we like, and you know, for 99 cents, and we're done, and we don't have to delve into what the artist is actually trying to say, which in turn has changed how artists create albums.
Well, it does change, it changes the way you think about it. But I think something's being lost there that I hope we don't lose altogether, which is, I mean, to me, an album is like a book, you know?
Yes.
And that's just...
Yeah, nicely said.
Yeah. So, I'm going to keep making, I'm not getting rich over here off this stuff, so I'm going to... Yeah, I don't know who is, with the current model of make an album and give it to Spotify for them to rip you off on. Yeah. It's craziness. So I just do what I want to do.
Right.
And I approach it with, I don't write music because I want to make money. I write music because it's what I have to do.
Yeah.
Keeps me sane. And, very seriously, it also gives you a place to put a lot of bad experience. I think it was a huge help to me after my brother committed suicide that I was able to take that pain and that suffering and turn it into art, music, an album, and hopefully in that, other people who have had, and we all will go through similar experiences with death. It can be good for someone else to listen to as well.
I have said that since my teens, mm-hmm. about my writing. Mm-hmm. I literally call it my therapy.
Sure.
Because where else are you going to put it?
Well, this is the thing. People go through terrible times and terrible suffering. And if they don't have an art form, they have no place to put that bad experience. And for us, I think it's just a great... You can actually take that and turn it into something positive. And that's the goal, yeah.
So another way where I think that this work is gripping and also, I think, challenging for the way we consume music today is... And we were talking a little bit about this before going on the air, is you slow a lot of things down, right? I mean, I think there's a sort of slower groove and a slower take to the whole thing. It's not something that you can just, it's not like musical popcorn, right? You just can't throw pieces back. You gotta spend some time with it.
Yeah, well, I think anything good is that way. Thanks for saying that. That's what we're going for. My ideal way of people listening to this is, taking 45 minutes and full focus, whether they're taking it for a long drive or something like that, or just listening around the house,
Cool. So you're doing the whole album and the CD release party?
Well, we're doing most all the songs from it. There are a couple of songs that are harder to do, so I got a lot of songs, so we might not do, say, Devil's Stew, which is one of my favorite songs on the record. It's just hard to reproduce it live because that groove is hard to get into.
Well, thank you so much for coming and talking to us this morning. Keith Morrison, The Crooked Numbers, CD Release Party. Tell people when and where.
All right. It's Friday, April 8th at the Anteroom downtown. And doors are at 7. And at 8 is the show with Mr. Baby opens, followed by... Sarah White and the Pearls, and then us. So we're looking forward to it, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Keith.
Thank you.
Hey, this is Michael Clem. You were listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
28 minutes past the hour, and we are coming to a point where I say that you should stay tuned afterwards, because afterwards it's, of course, the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your host, Rick Moore. His guest today, Kyle Austin, Executive Director of Addiction Recovery Systems. But before we get to that, actually after we get to that, why don't we talk about some stuff that's coming up? I'm way off my game today. Hey, Keith. Today's the last day to see To Kill a Mockingbird at Live Arts. It's also the last day to catch American Shakespeare Center's Actors Renaissance season over in Stanton. You can catch William Congreve's Love for Love, and of all the great plays in the Actors Renaissance season, that one's it. That's your last chance. Currently running until April 10th, Navajo Weaving, Geometry of the Warp and Weft at UVA's Fralin Art Museum, and also currently running until April 9th. At UVA, their drama department, The Arctic Circle and Recipe for Swedish Pancakes. Done by at UVA by the UVA Drama Department, a play by UVA alumna Samantha Mocker. Currently running until April 10th, Polaroid Stories at Guerrilla Theater. One of our favorite little places to go. Check out Guerrilla Theater. Greek myth meets modernity on the fringes of urban society. Guerrilla Theater, little theater that could. Currently running over in Stanton at Shannon Arts until April 10th. It's Rock of Ages. And also currently running on Thursdays and Saturdays until April 16th. It's No Wake. If you remember our interview with Jen Hoyt Tidwell last week, we talked about it. A multimedia outdoor performance and dance installation piece at the Ix Art Park by Jen Hoyt Tidwell, the 2016 inaugural public artist for the Bridge Progressive Arts Initiative. From April 4th to April 7th, we're going to have auditions for Antony and Cleopatra at Guerrilla Theater at 7 p.m. They're looking for actors 13 and up, and actors of color are encouraged to show up because they are needed. April 11th, Bent Theater Improv at Guerrilla Theater. All these things happening at Guerrilla Theater. Good gosh. Guerrilla Theater, I'm saying. Have you been there yet? April 9th, the Charlottesville Writer House Workshop, The Psychology of Your Characters. Do you have a character who just doesn't make sense and is disrupting the flow of your writing? Send her or him to the shrink with instructor Matt Pacino. For more information, check out www.writerhouse.org. April 10th to 11th, the Shenandoah Fringe Festival at Stanton, Virginia. Tickets at shenfringe.com. Check that out. April 23rd, it's Snow White by the Charlottesville Ballet at the V. Earl Dickerson Building at Piedmont, Virginia Community College. And let's take a look at just some of the music that you can have access to. Today, the Crozet Community Chorus Spring Concert at the Crozet Baptist Church at 4 p.m. Got your day. There you go. Got your day all set up right there. Tomorrow, ATM Unit at Rapture. April 5th, Larissa and Illusionistics at Fellini's. April 7th, the Charles Owen Trio at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. April 8th, our man Michael Clem and Thomas Gunn at Glasshouse Winery. April 9th, it's Red and the Romantics at Pro Reynata Farm Brewery. Also April 9th, Super Vixen at World of Beer. And also April 9th, oh, get this, babies, it's the Free Bridge Quintet playing the songs of Sinatra. And if you don't know the Free Bridge Quintet, it's Jeff Decker, Robert Jaspe, Pete Spar, Butch Taylor, and John Dirth playing at Cavill Hall. That is a nice lineup. just don't miss that if you can. April 11th. Should be yet another version of Uncovered. Singer-songwriter open mic with our man Brady Earnhardt at S Cafe. April 15th, it's Coast to Coast Live, a hip-hop artist showcase at Club Infusion in Richmond. April 17th, Amuse-Bouche by Victory Hall Opera Company. And, of course, every Monday, it's the singer-songwriter night at the local every Wednesday. Bob Bonetta at Cafe Katura. Also on Wednesday, the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Jim Wave at the Blue Moon Diner. Every Thursday, the Woolen Writers Revival, hosted by Will Thomas Reed and Brian Craddock at Firefly. And I can't believe I'm going to get through this list without falling into a coughing fit, but I'm going to do it right now by reminding you, every Thursday at Miller, it's the John Dirth Quintet, because sometimes you just got to come down to Dirth. And those are just some of the artistic things that you can do in our wonderful artistic town. If you are an artist and have an event and you would like us to announce it, we would like to do that announcing. Send it to us at our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/homegrownwpvc, or you can email it to us at homegrown947@gmail.com.
Okay, our next guest is a local dancer, choreographer, teacher. We're so pleased to have her here. Joy Raymond, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello. I'm good. I'm great. How are you?
Oh, thank you, Leslie. Adjusting the mic so that I don't have to stand on one foot. Which you could do much better than I could, but I so much not going to work for me. How you doing this morning?
I'm doing good. Excellent. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. So, you are a local dancer, and you teach at the Dance Spot, right?
I teach at the Dance Spot, and I'm the director of Fire in the Belly, which is a duet at the time. At the moment. It's a duet.
And could you please tell people specifically a duet for what type of dance is Fire in the Belly?
Belly dancing. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so how long has Fire in the Belly been going on?
Fire in the Belly has been around actually since like 2000.
Uh-huh.
So this is like 16 years now.
That's really impressive.
Yeah.
So what type of venues do you guys perform at for?
Well,
oh, in the other part of the duet?
We were performing at a Moroccan restaurant, but that has since closed. But let me tell you a little bit more about like Fire in the Belly's history. We started in 2000, and actually the director at the time was a woman named Susan Nicholson. And it was three of us. And then, you know, there's been, like, she had left and moved out of state. So I took over as artistic director. And then, like, so many different people have been in and out of Fire in the Belly. I mean, at one time we had five dancers, I believe. But so many people, I mean, when wow. you've been around for that long, you know, people have their lives. They have babies. They get married. They leave. Right, they right. move away. So now it's a duet. And Barbara has been in Fire in the Belly. Oops, sorry about that. I just kicked something. Fire in the Belly.
That's okay. Since you're a dancer, that's art.
Oh, okay. All right.
So we forgive that.
Barbara has been in Fire in the Belly for, gosh, how long has she been in? Maybe for 5 years? We performed in Richmond. We performed different places around town. Haven't been performing a whole lot lately because we're so busy. We both have lives
right.
that we need to live. It's really hard to get together and rehearse. That's been our main obstacle is like trying to find the time to get together and rehearse.
Right.
So we're performing at the Shenandoah Fringe Festival in April on April 10th and 11th. And we're going to take a break after that and just kind of, when we get together, we're just going to kind of mess around and see. We're not going to, like, work on choreography per se for any specific show. We're just going to get together and just see what happens. Which will
so
be much
how did you get interested in belly dancing?
Oh, God, that's a long story. See if I can shorten that. Well, I always liked music from other countries. I've always been fascinated by music in minor keys, maybe, and I just found it much more mysterious, and I wanted...
So shouldn't that have made you a goth? I mean...
Well, or a musician, actually.
There you go.
Which
you
is,
should have been a jazz musician.
Yes, I should have been a jazz musician. I totally agree with you there. And I never learned to play any instrument, and I don't know, like... I guess I use my body as my instrument, so...
That's awesome!
Yeah.
That's the perfect answer.
Yeah, I mean, although I still would really love to play an instrument, and I still wish I was a musician, but if I'm not a musician, I guess I'll be a dancer, you know. So, yeah, and I like always... I remember hearing... I'm showing my age now. I remember really loving George Harrison, like the stuff he did with his sitar.
Yeah.
The Beatles. Yeah. And I was like, how would I even move to this kind of music? And at first I wanted to do Indian dance, like classical Indian dance, but I didn't know anybody who taught that. And that's really challenging. And I feel like you have to start that when you're like a little tiny tot, you know? So I discovered a belly dance teacher in Northern Virginia, and I was living in Baltimore at the time. So I would drive to Northern Virginia and start taking lessons. And we're talking, this is back, this is like 1988. Long time ago. Yeah.
It's okay. We remember 88.
Yeah, yeah.
Yay.
Just around the corner.
Yeah.
Just around the corner. That's my story. I'm sticking to
yes.
it.
Great.
You know, I was quite younger than Clinton in 88. I was just a toddler.
Right, of course.
Quite younger. Quite
yeah.
younger. I'm still sticking to that. Just around the corner.
Yeah.
So it doesn't surprise me to hear you tell a story about being in Baltimore and traveling to pursue belly dance. I have a friend who is a belly dancer.
Okay.
And it was great because I learned a lot that I didn't know about belly dancing through her. And she told, the way she talked about it, it seems like the type of thing that really grabs hold of people.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, I think the fact that it's, well, the music, I think it's foreign, and I think people, it's different. I think the fact that it's different and exotic, not in that exotic dance kind of way, but in an exotic other, like it's unusual. And I think that attracts people to it. It's like they're curious about it. Yeah.
How long before, because it requires a sensitivity to the body and an ability to isolate particular parts of the body, specifically the pelvic area, that I think a lot of people in the West aren't really used to.
Yes.
Or maybe a lot of people, period, aren't really used to.
Yes.
How long in before you got to the place where you're like, oh, wait, I get it, here it is. Here's the core.
Yeah, you know, it took a long time. And when I first started, it was more of a hobby. And then I really got into it. And I think I really started training and learning about which muscles actually make the movements, you know, which muscles am I using to make a certain movement? And then really understanding the music, like classical Egyptian music, and trying to figure out. And even it's a natural way. I feel like it happens organically, but just figuring out like what movements just kind of express that phrase in the music, you know? And that's when I feel like, oh yeah, you know, it's magic. That's when the magic happens. Yeah.
So, as I'm listening to you describe this, it's the same thing that I have heard dancers who do Afro-Caribbean or African dance talk about.
Yes.
Them dancing with a drum circle.
Yes.
Yeah, that's interesting because I was just thinking that the relationship you're talking about between music and the movement seems tighter than when I've heard, say, modern dancers talk about dance with music, or ballet dancers talk about dance. Not to say that there isn't any relationship, because I have heard ballet dancers say,
right,
oh, you know, like we just had somebody from, was it here? We just had, or maybe I was just, oh no, I was just talking to somebody from the Charlottesville Ballet,
mm-hmm.
and she was talking about, what was it? It wasn't Dvorak. There was somebody who was just saying, and for some reason, we just love dance. So some Russian composer, like, we just love dancing to this composer.
Well, okay. And I've heard ballet dancers say that about dancing Swan Lake.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because maybe it was Tchaikovsky. Maybe it was probably Tchaikovsky.
Because it's so mm-hmm. iconic, and the choreography was made to fit so well with the music that, you know, that they have that relationship. I think it's probably harder to do in ballet just because, you know, the dance came after the music. But I also have a friend who belly danced for years and then transitioned to pole dancing.
Okay.
But she still does belly dancing every once in a while. And she, just like you, started it as a hobby. So what made you then say, I want to perform and do this?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I think part of it is, there's also a belly dance community. There's a sisterhood, this very supportive sisterhood. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was younger, I remember it getting ugly at times because, you know, you get a big group of women together and, you know, it can be.
We can get a little catty.
Yeah. But, you know, as I got older, you know, I'd stay away from that. And I don't see it as often, maybe because I try to stay away from it, but I don't see it as often. And there's this real sisterhood. So there's this feeling of belonging to a tribe, and it's so supportive. And I feel like it's not just about the dance and performing. It's about this tribe of women that are just, and it's not just women. That's the cool thing about it too. There's a lot of men who belly dance.
Right.
That's what I was going to ask. Is there a male analog to belly dance, or are there male
There are
belly dancers?
Plenty of male, well, not enough. as far as I'm concerned. There are quite a few male belly dancers out there that are amazing.
I had no
amazing
idea.
Well, you just YouTube male belly dancers and you'll see some amazing belly dancers. Yeah.
The other thing that my friend has, because she's trying to get me to start doing it. She's like, no, you don't. Because my friend, she's literally a size zero and has been for like her entire life. I hate her. But I mean, I love her, but I hate her. You know what I mean? But she's like, no. She's like, when I did it, you know, we had women of all sizes.
Absolutely.
In the class and it didn't matter. And it was all about, you know, learning the movements and really being an artist about the dance. We didn't care, you know, what size you wore.
Right.
And blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, but group of women in a room, I don't know. Like,
yeah, well, it's very empowering. Empowering. Just to be able to learn how to move your body in ways that you had never knew you could before, and using muscles. I mean, that right there is very empowering. But also, yes, I mean, it doesn't matter what size you are. I mean, I am not thin by any means.
Yeah, I'm looking at you. Hush.
No, I mean, well, you know, I'm wearing sweats and, you know, you can't tell, but it's not about what you look like. Although, you know, I mean, I think Hollywood and, you know, the media kind of
Bollywood
and yeah, I mean, and, you know, society in general, you know, if you're going to wear something that's skimpy, you're supposed to look a certain way, you know, and I'm so sick of that. You know, like I'm trying really hard to, like, you know, and like, hey, you know, those women who are thin, they're beautiful. I mean, but it should be for everyone, and society needs to see that, you know, belly dance and all forms of dance should be for every size. You know, it's not exclusive to a certain, you know, body type.
Amen, sister.
I don't know. Nobody wants to see me dressed like Aaron Eckhart. Ain't nobody want that. No.
Hey, you know what? I've seen guys your size in the right, you just have to have the right costume. Even I can't wear some of the costumes I used to wear. I can't fit into them. So, but
the,
you know, the right
costumes you get at the tent stores, maybe? just come now.
Hey.
Really? I thought we talked about the whole self-deprecating
That's
thing.
Right. That's
we
right. I don't want to hear
about that, right? You do realize that means I owe you a slap in the back of the head for talking bad about yourself.
Give him one for me, like, please.
Oh, cool. I can do him, too.
Yeah.
That's two. So, talk about how Fire in the Belly hooked up with Shenandoah French.
Well, Carmel Clavin, who is the organizer and the visionary of the whole Shenandoah Fringe, I've known for a few years now. I actually live on the other side of Blue Ridge Parkway. I live over near Waynesboro.
Oh, really?
So I
just last week, it was a Stanton show last week.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
See,
okay.
Homegrown, local art. When we say local, we have a wide range.
That's
for
right.
Local.
That's right. Yeah.
We
I
are
mean,
friendly across the mountain.
Representing.
That's right. That's
the
right. Representing. I mean, I teach in Charlottesville. You know, my job is in Charlottesville. A lot of things I do are in Charlottesville, but I actually live in Augusta County. So I've known Carmel for quite a few years now, and she's this amazing performer. She's a singer, dancer, actress, just incredible. And she puts on these great things once a month. She had been putting on these things called teacup cabarets. And and she collaborates with different people, and I've done two of them with her, and they've been so much fun. I mean, I've even sang in them, which I never sing, and she encouraged me to sing, and it's like so much fun. And I've been doing these little skits with her, and she's awesome, and I love working with her.
Yeah, she, I mean, had her on the show. She's amazing.
She is amazing. I can't say enough great things about her. I love her to death. Anyway, she asked if, you know, we wanted to come on board with the Shenandoah Fringe Festival, and I was like, of course, you know, like, no question. So there you have it.
That's awesome. So when are you performing at the festival?
Fire in the Belly is performing on Sunday, I think 7:30. At the Artisans stage with, we'll be under the, Spectacle and Mirth, Vaudeville Cabaret. And then on Monday, the same show will happen again, and it'll be at 4:15 on Monday. And so that's April 10th and 11th, Sunday and Monday.
Awesome. And so you also teach classes here in town. So if someone wants to take a class, where can they find you?
At the Dance Spot, which is, it's kind of, okay, it's like, right off of downtown mall where the ruins, whatever that landmark
the
thing
ruins.
Is.
The ruins. That's the best phrase for it ever.
Yeah, it's like...
The artist that would have been the landmark.
That's right, that's right. that is, like, it's right above the oh, what is it called? Jack Brown's Burgers and Fries?
Jack Brown's, yeah.
Yeah, it's right upstairs from there. So it's right near Live Arts, right there. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The
yeah,
dance
yeah.
spot.
Yeah. I've passed by that sign a lot of times.
Yeah, you just have to go up.
Yeah, it's kind of teeny. Like, you see it, but it's like, oh, a
yeah.
studio?
Oh, you have to go up the stairs, like, right, like, as if you're going inside Jack Brown's, but you go up those stairs, and it's that first door, and you'll see it. And the studio is actually a nice-sized studio.
So when are your classes?
My classes are at Monday, 6:30 to 8:00.
Wow, an hour and a half of Bellingdale.
Well, the first hour, actually, it's 6:30 to 7:30 is the first hour, which is open to everybody, like beginners. And then I have like a half hour where like a lot of my students that have been with me for a while, we do choreography the last half hour. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
There you go. Just an hour, Leslie.
There you go. Leslie, you can do it.
You just want to see me belly dance. That's what this is about, isn't it? That's what this is.
I just want to... Get away from two slaps.
You're not going to get away from it. It's a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. Okay.
How are your slap sugar? I don't even want to get to that.
It's tough love, but it's love.
Joy, thank you very much for coming on Homegrown.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right. Joy Raymond, she was awesome. And I suppose now it's time for Clinton to get ready to yell at me.
Would I ever yell at you?
Yes, you always yell at me. All right, so last night I was playing around on the internet after a day of cutting a script of over 24,000 words down to 14,000. I found two things of note in the arts, and I thought I'd share them with you. The first was a list of 14 things you may not have known about Gilligan's Island. It was a lovely little list with such tidbits as Skipper's last name and how the creator of the show chose the name of the island and the boat. How interesting was it to find that Gilligan is the only one whom they can't be sure that he had a last name. It was even more interesting to me that Natalie Schaefer, who played Mrs. Howell, wasn't a fan of the show. She took the part in a pilot for a free trip to Hawaii. She was actually mad that they decided to pick it up for the following seasons. Pretty interesting stuff to me at midnight last night. It got me thinking about all the things that go on behind the scenes of any show, not just TV. In live music and live theater, there are things that happen that only artists would understand. I could give you many examples of things that could only happen backstage during a rehearsal or show, and not only would you never believe me, you really wouldn't get it. No one would ever get why, when directing a teen show last year, having the entire cast in tears, including me, minutes before the show, was par for the course. You wouldn't understand why, during a show with very elaborate undergarments, it made sense for the guy playing my husband to lace them up before the show. Although you may get a kick out of the hilarity that ensued the night he was late and I almost wasn't dressed when the show started. The second thing was an article about the recent removal from the Tribeca Film Festival of a film about the dangers of vaccinations for children. Robert De Niro, who has an autistic son, first allowed the film in the festival as he thought it would be informative and a good addition. After viewing the film personally with medical professionals, he pulled it from the festival. The film found a home in a small theater. I also read a review of it, because after De Niro pulled it, I wanted to see what the fuss was about. Of course, the reviewer said that the film pulled on your heartstrings, but didn't give many, or for that matter, any real facts saying that autism is linked to vaccinations. And I started to think how powerful art can be. And I know you're wondering, how am I going to bridge Gilligan's Island and a film about vaccinations? Yeah, okay, well, here goes. This small, funny, quirky TV show that only aired for a few seasons starting in 1964 is still running in repeats on more than one station. It had three seasons of shows. It has a preposterous pilot, idiotic characters, and nothing really ever happens. But it's one of the most loved shows of all time. Juxtapose that with this. In the words of the review I read, crazy pants film about the link between vaccinations and autism, which is similarly devoid of fact or substance, yet had people walking out of the viewing vowing never to vaccinate their children based solely on the emotion that the film invoked. How's that for the power of art? How's that for a symbol of what artists can do? You know what, guys? We can change the world. We can sway people, move mountains, and turn a small story into something recognized and even enjoyed worldwide. That's a lot of power. So, my question is, why aren't we using it? And that's the weekly rant.
Really?
What, you have a problem with that?
Really?
I just can't win with you. I mean, I don't do a rant. You get mad because I don't do a rant. I do a rant and you're still upset. What are you upset about now?
I didn't get mad because you didn't do a rant.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, I did get mad because you didn't
do Yeah, you did. You threw a little fit is what you did.
There you go. But Gilligan's Island is your example for powerful art.
Hey, it had 3 seasons. It's still running. People love it.
Yeah, people love cannolis. That doesn't make them art. That doesn't mean you're going to stick them in museums.
I happen to know a few pastry chefs that when they make a cannoli, it's art.
Hey, little buddy, that's not art.
It was
sitting there wondering how Ginger. It was able to have all of those gowns and all of that makeup on that island for years. Gilligan's Island.
I didn't say it was like high art. I didn't say it was like highbrow or anything. But I mean, think about it. You see, if you're flipping through the channel and you come across an episode of Gilligan's Island, you're going to stop and watch at least for a few minutes.
Well, that's the thing. Stop and watch it at least for a few minutes because once you watch it for a few minutes, you're like, oh, yeah, it's that one. And then you go away because we've all seen them a umpteen number of times before.
Well, there were only 3 seasons. So that, you know, you got to kind of take what you get. But, I mean, still, they're still running in syndication. Okay?
Yeah, well, because they're cheap. That's why they're still running in syndication. I mean, come on. It's just
what you're not going to get mad at me and run out of the room today. Is that the allergy thing?
I can't believe that I've been fighting my allergies all show in order for you to come out and give like Gilligan's Island is art. Like this is what I've struggled through. Coughing.
Wait a minute.
To get to.
Every really? Other time, this you're upset that I don't appreciate the frivolity of art. That you're upset that I don't appreciate
you know,
the
but
little
here's
things.
No, that's not it at all. It's just that it's just entertainment. It's just entertainment. It doesn't have not everything has to be this big. Example of some sacred artistic thing, you know.
But you know what?
There are a bunch of Here's you said thing. Natalie Schaefer. There are a bunch of actors getting a paycheck.
Yes, and here's the thing. I saw a great quote by Albert Einstein this week.
And Albert Einstein.
Said, yes, Albert Einstein, and right.
What did he say?
You have 2 choices in life. You can treat nothing as a miracle, or you can treat everything as a miracle. And I choose the latter. Everything is a miracle. Everything. Everything has importance. Everything has significance.
Well, but wait a minute. If everything has significance, then effectively nothing has significance.
Oh, my God.
I mean, come on. You know, just,
you are such a downer.
Downer. Well, you know what? If I'm such a downer, then maybe I should go out and find an episode of Gilligan's Island.
Maybe you should.
That'll just
maybe that will yes help
tale,
you. Yes.
Tale of a Grateful Trip.
Oh my God.
Started
Did you know he got the name of the minnow from
tour.
a guy that didn't like the show.
One of the great things about Gilligan's Island, and here I'm going to do a I'm going to link between Gilligan's Island and your rant.
Oh my god!
They both feel like a 3-hour tour.
Oh, there you go,
Clinton. Oh my god! Can you believe he said that? Wow.
A 3-hour tour.
Okay. Well, he's got allergies, but he still slammed the door, didn't he? Alrighty. Well, we want to thank our guests, Keith Morris and Joy Raymond. I know I'm going to be at the Ante Room on the 8th to see Keith and the Crooked Numbers for the CD release party. I hope you guys will, too. And please go see Joy Raymond at the Shenandoah Fringe Festival. Thank you so much for listening today. You guys have a great week.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.